say the game is getting old. Monday morning and your coffee's cold. Life is not what.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to A New Direction. My name is Jay Izzo, and we have an outstanding show for you today. The book is entitled The Power of Three, Lessons in Leadership, short read by Stephen Mays. I say it's short because it's just not long in page length, but it's deep in depth. This book, I'll tell you, this book came across my desk a couple weeks ago. I had an opening. I had an author who had to change his schedule at the last minute. And I got a hold of Stephen and asked him if he could come on the show. And he said, sure, I'll do it. And this book has some significance for me too, because my daughter is just a big three person. She just loves the number three. Everything is about the number three for her. And so Kelly, if you're listening or watching, whatever it may be, baby, I just want to just tell you that you're kind of the inspiration for this book, for me to bring it on the show, The Power of Three. And as I read it, and I read it three times. And as I read it, I was like going, you know what? This is a great book. Threes are everywhere is something that Stephen will say in his book. In fact, that's kind of the opening chapter. And listen, if you've ever driven over a bridge, I can promise you that that bridge is holding up because of threes. And you go, what do you mean threes? Well, it's triangles are threes, three sides. And triangles are very powerful. And it's what holds our bridge up. It's what keeps things sturdy. And we're going to talk about these leadership lessons that he's done in threes. Absolutely fantastic. I enjoyed every one of them. And we're going to have a discussion. So let me do this and let me introduce you to my friend, Stephen Mays. So Stephen Mays, he was born into an Air Force family and is proud to be called a military brat. Well, I don't know if that's necessarily great or not, but he said it is. He traveled the country and the world following his father during his career as an Air Force sergeant. He graduated from the United States Naval Academy, go Navy, and majored in math. Yes, I said math. Oh boy, right? Don't be scared. He's a really good dude, and he likes to tell stories. And was selected for the Navy Nuclear Power Program following a successful interview with Admiral Rickover. He earned his Gold Dolphins aboard the USS Los Angeles, which was the lead ship in the Navy's fleet of attack submarines. He served on operational deployments in the Mediterranean Sea, as well as the Atlantic, Pacific, and Indian Oceans. His civilian career involved safety and risk evaluations of nuclear power plants for the Idaho National Laboratory, the civilian nuclear power industry in the United States and Canada, and government service with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission staff. He obtained a master's degree in electrical engineering along the way. He is passionate about storytelling and the subject of leadership, which is why he wrote this quick read, but deep read, The Power of Three Lessons in Leadership. He believes that leaders are made, not born, and that teaching others how to lead is the most rewarding and vital occupation anyone can participate in. And so he joins us. So, Stephen, welcome to A New Direction.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So let's dig right in. Feel like we've done this before, Stephen?
Somewhat.
Yeah, so let's just dig right in here to your foundational threes and the foundational principles. And you have three foundational principles in your first triangle. And it's honesty, courage, and talent. But what you do is you define honesty in a way that we may not be accustomed to. So talk to us about what honesty means in terms of the foundational principles of leadership.
Well, the thing I do with honesty is get away from the simplistic view of whether something is right or wrong, whether it's true or false. I think for leaders, the most important thing to do is recognize what situation you're in. What is your place in the world situation in it, the way it is? Not the way you want it to be, not the way it could be, not the way it should be if those idiots in charge would just let you do things your way, but the way that it is. And that requires really brutal honesty to see where you really are. Because as a leader, you're on a journey. And if you don't know where you are, how in the heck do you figure out how to get to where you want to be? So honesty is really, really critical. And I found by examining my own failures in life and others that when it comes to the catastrophic failures of leadership, It very rarely is talent. It very rarely is in anything other than honesty or courage. That's why those three things are all important to have a baseline so you can move forward if you want to be a leader.
So it seems to me that in order for us to get to honesty, we have to have some pretty good self-awareness. And that was the thing that struck me right away is an unself-aware leader is not going to be a very honest leader. There has to be a level of self-awareness that says, okay, what is this really? And then what filters am I using to, because I want it my way, or this is the way I see it. This is the way I think it should be. This is the map. I'm using my map. It's my way. I think there has to be a level of self-awareness there in order to get at the kind of honesty you're talking about.
Absolutely. It's hard to do. Mm. It's absolutely necessary to do. Mm. And if you don't practice it, fundamentally, you have a hard time moving forward. Mm-hmm. It manifests itself in frustrations down the line because you're starting from a place you thought was real and isn't. And so you find that happens, but you have to have the ability to look back and see where you are, because otherwise you've got no chance of getting where you want to be.
How does reflection and experience play a part in this, in honesty? Because you say that the definition itself can present some issues. You said first, those with less experience and less reflection on that experience will be at a disadvantage. Help us understand that a little bit clearer.
Well, if you don't understand the situation very well, you may be basically operating on a set of assumptions that aren't correct. Mm. And you will then choose a course of action based on those, and then that may or may not work. So sometimes you'll have that where your supervisors or your bosses or the leaders you report to will say, you know, that's not really the way that it is. Mm. And they have to correct you. And that's one way you get that. Another way you get that is you go and manifest your lack of understanding to your followers. And if you have good followers who will tell you, no, that's not the way that it is, then you can do that. But if you don't have the self-awareness and the ability to reflect on that, and you don't have people who are willing to tell you when you're not being correct, mm-hmm. because you've got a misunderstanding of the picture, then you're going to have a real bad time. So it's really critical that you do that. And a lot of times that comes with experiences, because you can't know any more than what you've experienced or what you've thought about or brought through. And as you go through life, you'll get more and more experiences as you go. And that's part of making your map as clear as it can be, so that the people around you can have a similar map and you can communicate because you're on the same map.
Mm. I know that we rely a lot on experience, and I understand experiences is so important, but does experience necessarily guarantee that we get to honesty or a clearer vision of the map?
Not necessarily. I think it gives us the opportunity to get there.
Okay.
But you still have to, as a leader, one of the things you have to understand is leadership. It's not about personality or style or anything else. It's about actions that you're going to take. And so your actions will be dictated by your perception. And if your actions are failing, one of the first things you need to do is say, were my assumptions and perceptions correct?
Mm.
And if you don't have that built-in self-awareness, a willingness to examine yourself, you're going to have a really, really hard time being a successful leader.
That leads us in.
Now, you can have a lot of success in life because you have authority.
Right.
Because authority and power allow you to direct people to do things, and they have to do it because you're in charge.
Right.
And you're telling them what they have to do. That's power. Okay. Well, power and leadership go along together a lot because people in positions of power are considered to be people in position of leadership. But leadership really doesn't have anything to do with acquiring power. Or what you do with Leadership is not about power. Leadership is about the way you use power, because you're using your understanding and your knowledge and your understanding where you want to go to direct people in how they want to go to get there with you. And you have to have that brutally honest conversation with yourself, not only when you start out, but all along the way. You have to take time to think about that and say, am I really in the right spot here?
Let me ask you about courage, because courage is the second part of the triangle of the foundational principles. You say courage consists of three things. You say courage is the ability to overcome fear, to take action for the benefit of others without regard to the risks to yourself. Let's talk about this, because you make it really, really clear, I felt in this book, that you've got to have all three to really exhibit courage, that you can't have one or the other. Talk us through that a little bit, because I think we may even misunderstand courage a little bit.
Yeah, I think so too. But I mean, most people, when they think of courage, they think of something like they see in a movie where, you know, Clint Eastwood in Line of Fire, where the guy jumps in front of the president, take the bullet for the president. That's brave. We misunderstand brave and courage.
Mm.
We think a person suffering through cancer treatment is brave, is courageous. Well, they're brave because they're putting up with a lot of pain and agony. That's bravery.
Mm-hmm.
But courage is willfully going someplace to do something for somebody else other than yourself and not counting or caring about what the cost is. You're saying, I'm going to do it in spite of the cost. I'm going to do it in spite of my fear. And I'm going to do it because I'm going to help somebody else. Now, when you think of courage in that way, the guy jumping in front of the president is exhibiting courage. He's afraid of dying, but he's jumping in front of the president to do something to keep him alive without regard to the cost to himself.
But it's also benefiting others.
Yes. But my point is, bravery is happening all around us all the time, and we don't pay attention to it. Mm-hmm. We don't recognize it. We don't reward it. And we don't even think about it that much. And the example I gave in the book with my daughter, who in first grade would come home from school every day with not eating any of her lunch, because her lunchbox was packed every morning and she'd come home and it had been touched. So since my wife worked at the same school she was going to, she asked one of the teachers why she didn't have time to eat her lunch. And she said, she's got plenty of time. So we asked the teacher to check in and see what was going on. And then she came, called us up and told us what was going on, and about ripped my heart out. And I get emotional every time I talk about this story. Turns out that there was a little boy in her class whose parents were well-to-do. And when the mother got pregnant and had her son, she decided to give up a very, very lucrative career to spend all of her time with her son. So the first face he saw in the morning was his mom. The face he interacted with all day long was his mom. And the face he saw before he closed his eyes at night was mom. So he was really, really attached to mom. So he gets to school and mom's not there anymore. So that's a little weird, but there's kids to play with and there's an adult in the room to kind of be that authority figure. So it's okay. Then lunchtime comes around. Now all the kids have put their lunch boxes in a little wagon, and the teacher rolls the wagon over to the dining room. And the kids all go in the dining room and they take their lunch boxes out and they sit them down and they separate them all on different desks and places. And they say, you have three things to do here. Sit here, eat your lunch, and be quiet. Now, my daughter is sitting there with the lunchbox and everything's fine. But this young man looks at his lunchbox and he sees the lunchbox that he watched his mom make for him. And she's nowhere around and he can't play with his friends. And he's like lost. And he starts to cry. And my daughter, who's the most empathic person I know, sees him, gets up from her place, goes over and sits next to him and talks to him because he's crying, and asks him why he's crying. And he starts talking to him. And so he stops crying and they have a conversation and he's eating his lunch and everything. And then she sees the teacher start coming back down the hallway. So she runs back over to her lunchbox, puts all her stuff back in the lunchbox, puts it in the wagon, and goes back to class. So when the teacher told us this, I was like, oh my gosh. So I'm asking my daughter, hey, Jessica, how come you didn't eat your lunch today? She goes, well, I didn't have enough time, Daddy. I go, Jessica, I think you had plenty of time, didn't you? And she gets a look on her face like, oh no, I've been caught, you know? And she has these big doe brown eyes like her mother. And she looks up and goes, uh-huh. And I said, you were helping your friend because he was upset. Uh-huh. So she's afraid she's going to get hurt, you know? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, Jessica, I can't tell you how proud I am for you going out and helping your friend. Mm. But it's okay to eat your lunch while you do it. But my point there is that struck me so much because people exhibit courage a lot and we don't pay attention to it. Mm-hmm. And if we don't pay attention to it and reward it and recognize it, we're not going to get more and more and more of it. We're going to get less and less and less.
Yeah, there's
in terms of leadership, the way this works is you have to know where you are. So you have to be honest, because when you're honest, you reduce the amount of fear you're facing. Mm-hmm. But there's still some. So once you're honest, you know what the fear is. Mm. Then you can overcome that fear so that you can do something for somebody else without regard to the cost. And you do that using your talent. Mm. So that's how those three things in the foundation work together. Your honesty allows you to exert your courage to use your talents. Mm-hmm. And if you're not being able to do those things, you're going to be less effective.
I think where people get stuck, you know, I coach a lot of business executives and leaders all over the country and Canada. And, you know, one of the things that I find striking is how fear can paralyze us. And getting people to do things afraid, by the way, is not an easy thing to do. I grew up on a farm as a farmhand in Nebraska. And I write about this in the first chapter of my book that I had to do a lot. The first lesson in the book was I have to do a lot of things afraid, because there was a lot of things I didn't know because wasn't raised on a farm. I just became a farmhand as a 9-year-old boy. And there was a lot of things I had to do that I never did, working around livestock and things like that. But I had to do them afraid. And I think what people end up happening, and leaders in particular can get stuck in this, is that if they sense fear, rather than walk into it, have the courage to walk into the fear for the benefit of others and the risk of themselves, they'll avoid it.
Right. And one of the things you have to do as a leader is you have to be willing to take risks. You have to be willing to endure failure, because that's the way we all learn. Mm. You don't learn by having everything go perfect every time. You learn by having things happen that you weren't expecting, and then learning from it. And that's, you're right, that's significant. But one of the key things is the more honest you are about what situation you're in, the less fear injects itself. Because one of the comments once was that people make up in paranoia and fear what they lack in knowledge. So fear comes with, it's an inherent in your life. Mm-hmm. There are things you don't know and things that can hurt you and things that are out there, but you have to find a way to get through it. You could die on the car, in your car tomorrow, but that's not going to stop you from going out and getting the car.
Right.
Because you've made an assessment that the risks are low enough and the reward is big enough that it's okay for me to get in my car and drive and do something rather than risk being killed in my car. But those are the kinds of evaluations you have to have with yourself that require you to be honest. Mm-hmm. Because the more honest you are, the more you can reduce the uncertainty. And the more you can handle the uncertainty, the more you can the easier it is to overcome fear so that you can act towards others. And make no mistake, leadership is about action. Mm-hmm. It's about influencing other people to achieve more than one of them or you or individually could or collectively could do. You're trying to make the whole greater than the sum of the parts.
Yeah. His name's Stephen Mays. The book is titled The Power of Three, Lessons in Leadership. Great quick read. I promise you'll enjoy it. Get it on Amazon, everywhere books sold. You're listening to him here on A New Direction. Hey folks, sponsors real quick, Zoundy. One of my sponsors here. It's the ultimate game changers for authors, publishers, and professionals who want to do an audiobook. Listen, I was speaking in Salt Lake City, and Zoundy gave me a QR code and link that I could give to all 300 people at the conference I was speaking at. And they could download the audiobook for me for free. And you go, well, why would you just give away the book? And here's why. One of the reasons why, and the most important reason, is because when people download my book, I get their email address and I can start interacting with them. What did they like? What did they not like? What would they like me to see to improve? What would they like to write next? And it's absolutely fantastic. I really encourage you, if you're in, got an audiobook out there, check out Zoundy. It's Zoundy.com. And if you go to Zoundy.com/J, that's J-A-Y, use my code JAY25. That's JAY25. You'll unlock special savings. Check them out, Zoundy.com. And Linda Craft Team Realtors, for more than 40 years, they have been the leaders in the transition market. And you go, whoa, I thought you said real estate. What do you mean transition? Well, think about it. Every place you've ever lived has been a transition in life. And they know how to take the stress out of that and make the process smoother. So listen, when you're ready to make your next transition, whether it's selling your home, buying your home, check them out. Linda Craft Team, that's lindacraft.com, LindaCraft.com. And we're back here on A New Direction with Stephen Mays, author of this book that's pretty cool. It's called The Power of Three, Lessons in Leadership. And we just went through the foundations, which was honesty, courage, and talent, and spent some time there. But there's another, we're going to move on to what I call chapter two. I know that that's not how you wrote it in the book, but I'm going to call it chapter two, which is called Dealing with Missed Expectations. And the three pieces here are what, how, and wanna. W-N-N-A, wanna. If you're from the South, like here, you know, they're talking about you want to. Do you have your want to, is what they sometimes say.
You're fixing twos.
You're fixing twos, yeah. So let's talk about expectations and dealing with missed expectations, because this is a leadership issue. Talk about how expectations are part of leadership, and let's talk about what, how, and wanna.
Okay, well, if you have your foundation in order, you have the chance to take actions to get things done and achieve things. But there are three kinds of things that get in your way, three kinds of challenges. One is expectations don't get met. One is a despair arrives in your organization. The other one is ethical challenges. But 99% of the things you're going to deal with in most leadership positions is going to be unmet expectations. Something was supposed to be delivered to the customer by Friday and it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. Or you were supposed to do an analysis by June and you didn't happen. Or you did it, but it cost 2.5 times as much as you expected it to. Or you did it, but it really wasn't a very good analysis. Something happened that turned out to be not the way you expected it to be. So now the question for the leader is, why? So I looked at that and I found, well, there's only really three things that really go into whether or not an expectation gets successfully met. One is, does the person who is supposed to do the expectation know what it is? If you don't know what the expectation is, your chances of meeting it are very, very slim. Now, who's supposed to be setting the expectation of what? The leader is supposed to do that. The leader is supposed to make sure the people who are executing the tasks know what it is they're supposed to do. And if you're not being clear about that, then that's not the person who's trying to do the task's fault. That's the leader's fault. The next thing is, and this is probably more common than not, is that people know what they're supposed to do, but they're not really clear on how to do it, or they don't know if they have the time, the skill, the training, the resources to get it done. So if you have somebody that you're expecting to get something done and you don't know whether or not they're trained to do it, you don't know if they're capable to do it, you don't know if they have the tools to do it, you don't know if they have the time to do it. You don't know if they have 500 million other things that you're supposed to be doing at the same time. Then that's the leader's fault. Because the person who's got the assignment for the task, if they have that knowledge and they have that time and they have the resources and they have the skills, then the only thing left for why the thing didn't happen is because they didn't want to. But here's the thing. Most of the times what you'll see is something will go wrong and people will have the following reaction. Oh, that Jones, can't he get anything right? He just doesn't seem to care about getting the job done right. So they immediately jump to wanna before they've even asked the question of what and how. And that's just bad leadership. Leaders, when something doesn't go wrong, the first question they have to do is go down the hall to the bathroom, turn left at the sink, and look in the mirror and say, was I really clear about what needed to be done? Was I really supporting this person by making sure they had the time, the training, the resources, and the wherewithal to get it done? Did I overburden them with so much stuff to do that there's no way they could have done all the things, and so they did something else, and this one got left behind? So the what and the how belong to the leader. They have to make sure that that communication and that expectation is clear. In other words, we have to make sure that the person who's executing the tasks is on the same map as the leader who's expecting it to get done. One of the things I hear all the time in leadership people is they say, well, it's my job just to tell people what to do. It's their job to figure out how to make it happen. I think, thank you very much. You just explained to me why you're a lousy leader. Okay. Because if there's 10 pounds of stuff on the floor and you give a guy a five-pound bag and say, clean up the floor, put everything in the bag, he's got a five-pound bag. 5 pounds of stuff are still going to be on the floor when you end. Mm-hmm. That's the leader's fault, not the guy's, person who's doing it's fault. But so many times, you know, you as a leader sometimes will get nothing but lemons, but your bosses are expecting champagne. So if you find yourself in that situation as a follower to somebody else who's a leader, you need to be able to say, hey, I've got lemons here and I can make you some great lemonade, but I can't make champagne. So that's that discussion that has to occur about what and how. What is it you're looking for? Do I have the tools and the resources to make it happen for you? If I have these things, here's what I can do. And that's the reason why most expectations don't get met, is because that conversation doesn't happen. And because as the process goes along, people don't engage each other and say, hey, how's this happening? Is this going? You need anything? What's the problem? What do we need to do to fix it? Because they don't do that. And that's bad leadership.
And this is where I got to tell you, when I read this section, and then of course, listening to you now, just reinforced what I read. When I read this section, I was like, you know, this is a litmus test for your communication.
Yes. Because
have you really been clear on what it is your people are supposed to do? And have you even been clearer on how they're supposed to do it? Because you're absolutely correct here. We jump immediately to blaming the person for not doing it versus taking a look at ourselves as leaders and going, well, how was my communication here? I mean, was I really, really clear, or do I just think I'm really clear? And then this takes us back to honesty again, because then
it
takes us back to honesty, because then we have to go, well, was my roadmap clear? Was I really looking at things the way I want to see it, or am I really looking at things the way they really are? Because the reality is I have to look at myself first in the first two by going, well, I probably wasn't really clear on what they really were supposed to do, and I didn't explain that well. And I have to start going, number two, yeah, I may have told them what to do. I'm not sure I told them how to do that. And I'm not sure that I gave, and then here's the other part. I'm not sure I gave them all the tools that they need so that they could execute the how. But we immediately jump to they just didn't want to do it.
Yeah, right. And that's a big mistake. And I didn't mention it so much in the book, but here's where the key issue, the word comes up over and over again when these happen. Priorities. Many times things don't happen because of priorities, and it's basically overloading somebody. Priorities are not the order in which you do everything. Priorities are the order in which you do the important stuff and the stuff you don't do at all because you can't do it all. And leaders often think all they have to do is just tell people what needs to be done and how to do it, and they can get it all done. And they... They add stuff to the plate. They never take anything off. Mm. And if you're doing that, you're not being a leader. You're just setting people up to fail, because you're making them the responsible for judging the priorities, which may be different from what you think the priority should be,
right?
Because you haven't sat down and explained it to them.
Right.
And if you think your what things to do is something that you can write down into a 500-page human resources manual and manual instructions of how you conduct business, then you're also badly mistaken.
Right.
Because that's not the way people work.
Yeah, and I think here is probably a good place to jump into the want to part of it, because I'm a big believer in the Eisenhower matrix. Have you ever seen the Eisenhower matrix, where what's urgent and important, what's not yes. urgent, what right?
And the four square matrix.
Yeah, the four square.
Urgent, not urgent, important and not important.
Yeah. And I'm a big believer in using that. I know I use it in my coaching with my leaders that I work with, is because if everything's urgent and important, nothing is.
Exactly.
Not a thing is important to you. And so being able to really figure out, well, what can I delegate? What can I schedule? And then what's just not important at all is real important to do. And this then comes right into the idea of motivation. And this is where, and you're correct again, that leaders aren't motivators, because we don't motivate people at all. We may inspire them, and you're going to talk about that later. We won't get into that right now. But we're not responsible as leaders for somebody else's motivation, are we?
No, we're not. And the role of the leader, again, this goes back to honesty again. The role of the leader is to understand what that person brings to the equation. Mm. What do they bring to the process? And you have to understand what motivates them. Mm. What do they like to do? What do they don't like to do? What are they good at? What are they not good at? Mm. In order to make sure you're making the assignments and you're setting the process in place so that you're trying to match up their motivations with what is needed to get the achievement done.
Right.
And if you've got somebody who is a free thinker, and you want to put them into the box of, you're just going to line up all the pencils in this box all the time, you've lost them. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's true.
But yeah. But on the other hand, if you got somebody say, I want you to go out and be a free thinker and figure out what we're going to do for something.
Right.
And they're the people that like to stack the pencils in the box. You've also misled them.
Right.
So you have to match up. You have to match up who and where they are with what needs to be accomplished. Mm. And all of that is the leader's responsibility. It's not theirs. It's the leader's responsibility. Mm-hmm.
Totally agree. You know, this is where you made a really big issue. And I want you to talk about it, because I thought this was so fundamentally important, because we abuse this word. And you called a six-syllable word for blame. It's the word accountability. And we have used this completely wrong. And I think you hit this one out of the park. Let's talk about how we have messed up accountability.
Well, you know, the first thing you have to do is go back and look at the word itself. What's the key word in the word accountability?
Account.
Count. Count is the key word. So what you're going to do is, I like to say it's like this. You take the sheet of paper and you draw the line down the middle of the paper, and you say, what happened right? What happened wrong? And you start listing them. And then you get to the bottom and you say, well, what outweighed what, and how important is it to make something happen with this? So the point of accountability is not to blame. The point of accountability is to understand what's happened and how you move forward from there to accomplish what you were trying to do in the first place. Mm. That's what accountability is. Blame is the assignment of fault. Mm. And the only time fault really needs to be addressed like that is when it's intentional and malicious.
Right.
Because everybody makes mistakes. Everybody chooses the things that they like better than other things. But it's the only time we should be doing the blame thing is when somebody is doing something wrong. Hmm. It's consequential and it's malicious and intentional. Mm. Otherwise, it's not a, it's the blame doesn't enter into the picture. The only, at that point, all you say is, okay, what happened good? What happened bad? How do we fix that?
This is the after action report that I talk about regularly with people, and in leadership. And I practice it with my, tier one hockey, teams that I talk to is, you know, after practices, after games, you know, it's three questions. What went right? What went wrong? And what can we do to improve?
Right.
Right. And that's accountability. Yes. Accountability isn't, okay, you know, you were supposed to make 100 phone calls this week. You didn't. Why did you suck? That's not accountability.
That's not accountability.
Yeah.
No. If you were supposed to make 100 phone calls this week,
right?
The question then becomes, did you tell that person, I want you to make 100 phone calls this week?
Okay.
If you didn't do that and you were expecting it, it's your fault.
Right. But if they still didn't do it, let's say they didn't do it, Stephen, and they didn't do it, right? I think to imply malintent here is wrong. I think we have to be, as leaders, coaches, in a sense, where we have to go, okay, well, you didn't make 100, but you did make 60. So what went right with those 60? Tell me what went wrong with the other 40. And then tell me a plan that you're going to have to improve it, right? I mean, isn't that really what accountability you're really talking about in that situation?
That's exactly right. Accountability is trying to find out what's right, what's wrong, and what you can do to be better.
Yeah.
Because you know what? None of us are perfect.
Right.
None of us ever are going to be perfect. I remember many years ago writing a description of what I thought I wanted a group of my people to do at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. I said, first rule, progress, not perfection.
Right.
I want to know everybody in there that I didn't expect any of them to be perfect. I wasn't perfect. They weren't perfect. I wanted them to make progress. Mm. I wanted them to do better. Mm. And I wanted them to be honest about that. And so we could then say, okay, where can we make progress? Where are the areas we can't make progress?
Right.
And move on from there. But again, that goes back to the honesty question. Where are you? What's your situation the way that it is, as opposed to the way you think it should be?
Mm. Right. His name's Stephen Mace. So good, isn't it, folks? I'm telling you, so good. Thanks for tuning in, by the way. The Power of Three, Lessons in Leadership, Stephen Mace. It's not very long. It's only about 50 pages long, not counting pictures and everything else he's got in it. But it's you could just hear just how powerful it is. You're listening to him here on A New Direction. Hey, folks, got to talk about Zoundy. I use them regularly, love them. If you've got a book out there and you have not used an audio platform, I really suggest Zoundy because you'll never get better marketing. It's going to help maximize your audiobook reach. It's absolutely fundamentally awesome. Go to Zoundy.com, Zoundy.com, then go /J, and then use my code JAY25 to get special savings. Great audiobook platform, great to listen to. Be able to communicate with the people who are listening to your book in ways that will encourage you and also help you work towards other things in terms of being able to maybe leverage yourself to get into that next speaking engagement, or maybe it's a coaching situation, whatever it might be. Check them out, zoundy.com/J, use JAY25. And Linda Craft Team Realtors, you know what? I got to tell you something, been around for 40 years. I know that every real estate agent has a real estate website out there. I know every company does. I'm just telling you, and I am biased, and I'm freely admitting this, but I think it's the best website, real estate website on the planet. Yeah, they have everything all the other sites do. Like, you know, they have listings and what you can buy and what's for sale. But here's some of the things that I've not seen in other websites. Like, they got a child psychologist to write about how to move with children. They got a veterinarian to talk about how to move with a pet. They do a great show called Real Estate Right Now, where they're interviewing live guests in studio about things that you need to know about the real estate market and different aspects of real estate. It's just fundamentally a complete website, and I think you should check it out. And it's real easy to go. Just go to lindacraft.com. It's lindacraft.com. And we're back here on A New Direction with my friend Stephen Mays. The book, The Power of Leader, The Power of, I almost blew it. The Power of Three. It's such a simple title, and I almost blew it. The Power of Three, Lessons of Leadership, with Stephen Mays here today. So Stephen, let's move on, because I know people are going to want to chomp at the bit at this one. And this is dealing with conflict. Oh my gosh, Stephen. If you've been in leadership for more than 3 days, I promise you that there's going to be conflict pretty quickly. And you have your three for dealing with conflict is accept, leave, or fix. Let's talk about conflict, and let's talk about how we get to it, to accept it, leave it, or fix it.
This is something I spent a lot of time thinking about. When you're faced with an ethical conflict, when somebody's either asking you or telling you to do something, or you see somebody do something that shouldn't be done at all, it's a problem. Now, one of the things I've been looking at this, I found out is that when you have an ethical conflict, everybody gets hurt. Nobody escapes. Now, the thing I also told people about is if you really want to know about leadership, you ought to read Aesop's Fable, because it has so many great leadership stories in it. And one of them is one that brought me to this particular part. It's the story of the emperor's new clothes. And if you remember that, the emperor had some people who came on and told him there were these great tailors and they were going to making these wonderful outfits to wear, and they didn't do it. And so they just pretended that they had outfits on, and they told him about how marvelous he looked and how great everything was. And nobody would say there's no clothes there. And so, because they were afraid of the tailors, they were afraid of the emperor, they were afraid that somebody might get upset with them. This goes back to the courage thing a little bit too. Mm-hmm. So eventually this goes on and on and on, and the emperor's paying these people for these clothes that he's not even wearing. And finally he's parading around in the streets and people are in adoration to the emperor. And the little kid says, "The emperor has no clothes on." And then everybody realizes together instantly that the emperor's naked. Mm-hmm. The emperor gets hurt. The tailors are going to surely get hurt. The people who pretended that the emperor was wearing great looking clothes are going to feel a little stupid. And the only person who's going to, you know, and the little kid's going to be told, "Shh, quiet, quiet, don't say anything like that." But so that's the problem. So the thing you do when you're in a conflict is you get to choose which of the three areas you're going to be in. And I use the three areas that I borrowed from the Serenity Prayer. God grant me the courage to change the things I can, the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, and the wisdom to know the difference. So one of the things you can do is fix the problem. And that's sometimes hard to do, especially if the person causing the problem is the boss. That's really hard, but you can fix the problem. You may have the capability and the talent and the willingness to fix the problem. You overcome your fear, you fix the problem. Or sometimes you can't fix it. You're not even capable of fixing it. So you just have to say, "Well, I guess I can't fix it. I just have to live with it. Even though I don't like it, I'm just going to have to live with it." Then the last thing you do is you say, "Well, you know, I can't fix it, and I can't live with this either. So there's only one other option available. That's to leave." And if you leave, you know, that's also a down thing. You were in something you thought it was secure, you were working and doing things, and now it's become intolerable and you have to leave. So those are the only three choices you have. And choices are really to fix it, accept it, or leave it. And you can do one of those three. But there's one other choice. And that's the one a lot of people do. And sometimes it applies to you. I know it's applied to me from time to time. When I tell the story to everybody, I tell them, "You're going to remember the name of somebody immediately that fits the fourth category." The fourth category is the people who don't fix it, who won't accept it, and won't leave. So what do? They hang around and bitch about it.
Right.
And all they're doing is being a cancer to themselves and a cancer to everybody around them. And there's only one cure for cancer. Excision.
Got to cut it out.
Yeah. And that's it. But the, if you, you know, I give the, one of the examples I give in the book is the story about the massacre at My Lai after the Tet Offensive, when the army was clearing out all the Hmong and the North Vietnamese army people. And allegedly, an army lieutenant was told to waste the village. And so he went out and started killing everybody in the village. And a helicopter pilot who was running reconnaissance at the time saw what was going on, and he decided he couldn't accept that. So he set his helicopter down between the troops and the villagers and told the guys on his helicopter, he said, if anybody moves those villagers, shoot them. And he called back and radioed to headquarters about what was going on. So he stopped the program. He had it. But that was a really tough thing for him. And it was really tough for the people who were in that platoon who were told to kill people. And, you know, how did, why? They accepted it. And they just went out and did it. Mm. You wonder, how does that happen? Well, it's kind of the same way the Germans loaded the Jews on the trains to Auschwitz. Mm. They knew it was wrong, but they couldn't fix it. They just accepted it. Mm. And they couldn't or wouldn't leave. Mm. So those are the problems you get to when you get into ethical conflicts, is that everybody loses. And your only choice is to, what section can you live with, tolerate, and survive? Mm. That's what ethical conflicts do to you.
I looked at this Serenity Prayer, which I've known for, I don't know, I can't even remember when I learned it. It's been so long. It's been along with me. But I looked at this very, very differently after I read your chapter on this. Because here's the thing that I read about. Because when it says, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Okay, that's the first part. The courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I think this is where courage comes in so much in this, and it said it in here, but it flies right back, is that oftentimes what we do is, I think we read this prayer and we stop at the first part. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. But that's not the whole prayer.
The prayer actually starts, God grant me the courage.
No, it starts, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Then the second part is the courage to change the things I can.
Either way.
Yeah, but that's the thing is...
They go together.
The thing is that we often stop at just going, well, I just need to learn to accept it. No. You've got to have the wisdom to know the difference. Is it something I can accept, or is it something I can fix? And so often what we do is we go, I just need to accept it, and we don't have the courage to try to fix it. That's the part that stuck out to me, was that we think, because it's easier, let's be honest, it's much easier to just go, I'll just accept it, than it is to have the courage to go fix it.
Well, that's why I move the courage piece down into the baseline of leadership, because that's not the only place, not only on ethical conflicts, but on other things, you have to have the courage to step up to power and say, no, sometimes that's required.
But I was
well aware of that portion of it. But that's why I decided to move courage into the baseline, because it applies to more than just ethical conflicts.
Yeah, I think because, you know, we're not very good. You know, we're not very good sometimes with courage. You know, especially because if we can fix it, sometimes we just won't, because it's so much easier to accept it. And I started really thinking about this when I read this chapter, and I was like going, how many times have I gone through, and rather, even though I probably may have had a solution to fix something, that I just go, you know, I got lazy and I just decided to accept it. But that's not the whole quote. And that's not what we're getting at here. It's the idea, do you know when to accept? Do you know when to fix? And do you know when to leave? That requires a different level of thinking.
Yes, it does. And again, if you don't do one of those three things, you end up in that fourth bag,
right,
which is just hang around and bitch about it, which is right, worse than any of the other three.
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
I've been guilty of that.
I have too. Yeah, I'm right with you. You know, you do spend a little time here talking about leadership versus authority, and we talked about it a little bit here. But there is a fundamental difference, and I think people, I don't think people understand. I think there's a lot of people who want authority, but they don't want leadership. I really do, because I think they're power hungry. So I think
they don't accept accountability.
Right.
That's what the problem is.
Right. Because if I have the authority over you, then I don't have to be accountable, because you know what? It's mine. I have the power. You don't. There's a fundamental difference.
And there are times when power is good.
Right.
There are the times when having just straight authority, I say you do, is good.
Right.
But it's not all the time.
Right. Absolutely true.
And that's part of what then the Serenity Bearer is talking about, knowing the wisdom to know the difference.
Right.
But yeah, that goes up into something we talk about a little bit later in the achievements phase about depending.
Right.
Because one of the things I learned very early in the Navy was that if you're the captain of the ship, you're responsible for everything.
Right.
Everything that went good and everything that went bad. And it doesn't matter whether you personally and directly did it or didn't do it. Mm. You still own that. Mm. And a lot of people who go into leadership and get involved in situations where they're in positions of authority or power, is they like the idea that they can make things happen. And when they're good, everybody loves them. Everybody tells them how great they are. Even if they weren't the ones, you know, putting the bricks together or making everything happen, they were just the ones kind of behind the scenes directing. You know, the leader gets the credit when things go wrong. But if you're in it for power, you don't like it when things go wrong and you weren't the one who did it.
Right.
You want to avoid that. And so I termed a coin, which is not in the book. I'll give it to you now. I coined a term for leaders that do that. Leaders that don't depend on other people and are willing to accept responsibility are what I call comma but leaders. And the reason for that is when something goes wrong, here's what the leader does. The leader says, I accept full responsibility for this problem that occurred in my outfit. And here's how we're going to address it. That's what the leader does. The comma but leader does almost the same thing. They start out and say, I accept full responsibility for this terrible accident. Then they insert a comma and they insert the word but into the sentence. And then everything after that is an excuse about why whatever happened wasn't their fault, why they shouldn't be punished. They shouldn't get any bad repercussions. Somebody else needs to get blame and move on with that. So you every time you hear a leader say, I accept responsibility, blah, 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 comma, but you know that everything else after that is about throwing grandmother and anybody else they can find under the bus to avoid accountability.
Right.
Because they don't want to do the accountability. And there's so many examples of it. It's it's all over the place. I mean, once you hear it,
right,
and you understand, hey, that's a comma but comment,
right?
Then you know that person is not a very good leader.
Yeah, another litmus test. I want to finish up here in a couple minutes with what do leaders do? ? And you have another three triangle, which is called AID, A-I-D, mm-hmm. Assist, Inspire, Depend. Walk us through what do leaders do in AID?
Okay, well, the biggest thing is that you have to recognize that if you could do it all yourself, you wouldn't need any followers. So the very fact that you're a leader in an organization or a group means that you can't do it all by yourself. So that means you have to have other people doing it. So if you want to achieve something together with other people, The first thing you have to do is help them. You have to assist them. You have to put them in positions where they can be successful. You have to give them the tools that they need. You have to make sure they understand whether they're the lowest rung on the ladder or the nearest the top of the ladder, how important their particular activity is to the overall system. Then you have to inspire them. You have to say, here's why what you do really matters. So they get ownership of the whole package, even if they're only doing a little part of it. And the last thing is, you have to depend on them. If you can't accept the fact that problems may occur that you didn't directly control, then one of two things is going to happen to you. Either you're going to be a comma but leader, or you're going to be a micromanager, somebody who tries to determine everything that's going to be done by everybody all the time, everywhere, in any space. And those people are just poison, because they interfere with people's motivation. They interfere with their accomplishment. They take up time and energy that could be spent assisting and inspiring. Instead, they're causing people to go into defensive mode rather than offensive mode, if you will, to get something done. And so depend means you have to depend on people and recognize that if the credit comes, you're going to be given lots of credit. But when failure comes, you're going to be given lots of blame.
Right.
And if you don't like that, you don't want to do that, tough. Get out of the leadership business, because you don't belong.
Right.
We learned back in the Navy very early on that, for example, if the, you know, the captain of the ship is responsible for everything, if he's asleep in his cabin at night and the ship runs aground or gets into a collision with another ship, guess what? The captain's accountable. Was he on the bridge? Could he have done something different? Maybe. Did it matter that he was not there? No. It happened, and he's responsible. And that was a fundamental law that was required of everybody who thought they wanted to be in the Navy and be in leadership. If you couldn't understand that concept of accepting responsibility and depending on other people, you're not going to be a very good leader.
Yeah.
You can't be.
We've done our hour. Stephen, it's been a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed it. I hope you have too.
Yes.
This has been a lot of fun. Tell people how they can get a hold of you. If they'd like to reach you to maybe talk, speak, or coach, or consult. How can they find you?
Well, I have a website that has almost everything that's in the book distilled, and I put a bunch of leadership lessons from the book, as well as ones I've written since the book was published. It's the www.powerofthreeleadership. That's all one word. Mm-hmm. Power of three, the number three, leadership.com.
Perfect.
And that website has the picture. It has definitions of everything. You just got to click on them and see them. And then it has a bunch of lessons on there. Also, you can get me through my email at semcon@comcast.net. I will respond to anything there. And you go to the website, you can also find my phone number and my mailing address.
Perfect.
So, and if you want to have comments and have a conversation, I'm more than happy to do that either through the comment section or through phone calls or email.
I can promise you that he'll talk to you by phone. He talked to me for over an hour. I can promise you that. So I can promise you he'll have a conversation with you. Stephen, stay with me. Folks, this is the show. You know what I say to you every week, right? You're in control of three things: your attitude, your effort, and your resiliency. I know that life doesn't always give us what we want. It doesn't always have the circumstances that we asked for. But you know what? You're still in control of your attitude. You can choose it. It's up to you to do that. Make that choice today to have a positive attitude. Your effort is tied to your excellence, and your excellence is tied to your effort. We don't always have the same amount of energy left in the tank, but what are you going to do with what you do have? Be excellent, not perfect. Be excellent with what you have today. Again, that's your choice. And then finally, we're going to get punched in the gut and punched in the teeth and get knocked down, but it's up to you to get back up again. Why? Because you're worth it, and we want you on the team. I'll be back next week with another great guest. It's going to be another great book. It means it's an automatic another great show. You had a lot of choices. You chose us, so thank you for doing that. I really am grateful. Give us a thumbs up on YouTube if you're watching us there. And if you're wherever you're listening via podcast or radio, give us a positive 5-star review. We appreciate it. I'm very grateful to you all. You know what I say to you all over the world, and that's this. Ciao, everybody.
A new direction, things are gonna change. You can find the strength to go a different way, yeah. The time has come, your dreams will take you places you have never been before. Find your passion, find your strength. Don't worry anymore. A new direction.